I was remembering an experience I had last summer when I was picking up my sister at the airport. She was coming in for a visit, and I sat down to wait for her plane, and I sat next to somebody who had apparently been stranded at the airport for a while. She was trying to get back to Tennessee. And as we started talking, she was telling me that she'd been visiting California for a little bit and been to Europe and been traveling around and was really looking forward to getting home because it had been a long trip. And she just began talking, and I thought, oh, gee, where'd you go in Europe? And she said, oh, Greece. And somehow I just thought Bible study. I just thought that. And as we started talking, I said, oh, where did you go in Greece? Because I've been to some of the islands there. And she said, oh, Patmos. And I said, oh, isn't that the island where John received the revelation? And her eyes just lit up. And she said, yes. And then she was almost, I could see in her eyes, she felt like she'd found a twin soul, you know, somebody who she could relate to. And but then she started talking about her time in California and how frightening the experience had been, just how alternative everything was in California. And how, you know, there was yoga this and alternative this and that she'd also spent a little bit of time on Castro Street in San Francisco, and oh my goodness. And so we were just, you know, I was thinking, we're going to have some fun here. And so she starts to tell me a little bit more about herself, that she's getting her doctorate in theology in Tennessee. And she says, and what do you do? I don't normally just pop out and say I'm a minister, but in this case, I really wanted to see where the conversation would go. So I said, I'm a minister. She said, oh, really? And she said, well, where do you practice? What's your church? And I said, well, it's an alternative church. And her eyes just kind of sunk back. She thought, oh, I can't wait to get on the plane. And she said, well, you know, okay, she was patient and she was trying to be open, and she asked me a little bit. And I said, well, it's based on the idea that to have a true experience of what you're seeking, you have to have it inside. And, you know, as Jesus said, seek ye first the kingdom of God within you. And I closed my brief comment with it. It's that universal link of all religions, that we're all seeking that inner peace, that inner wisdom. And she just looked at me and said, that's what you believe. And just then my sister arrived, and I had to bid farewell to our brief friendship. But it's interesting because I've got a number of relatives who are ministers of, I think they're Methodist or something. And I've always wanted to get into a conversation with them just to see, because, you know, we could find so much in common if we were able to just sit and be open to one another. I mean, the commonality is glaring, but there's so much dogma, really, and that restricts us of the mind. And Scripture can take us only so far, as the reading today talks about. Scripture, Yogananda would say, you can argue with it, you can, you know, disagree with it, you can analyze it, but it won't talk back to you. But a guru will set you straight on anything that you need understanding for. And my first experience, kind of coming out of really having no religion as a youngster, I grew up in the Protestant church, was to say really no religion. They didn't have anything fun on the altar, and the song books were awful. Any song that you could pick up, you know, is just like unsingable, sounded terrible, and I was just, ugh. But when I first saw the picture of Yogananda, it was a warm summer evening in Sacramento, and I was walking through the streets, and I peeked in the window there. It was an SRF church, and it was locked at the time. And I looked inside the window, and that was my first meeting with Yogananda, with the master. Masters say that link that you have with them is sometimes very ancient, goes back a long ways, and can be extremely familiar. And it was. I just looked at that picture for a long time, and I thought, I mean, it was beyond thought. I could feel there was this vast love emanating from the eyes of that picture, so infinite that my mind could never grasp it. And yet, all in the same moment, so personal, beyond any, deeper than any relationship I had known in my life. And yet, it was just a picture. But it stayed with me, and it was the first call, really, I think. And a couple years later, I came to Ananda and proceeded along the path in earnest. The guru is relationship to us. First, we can begin with common sense. We can begin by, you know, kind of analyzing it and seeing, you know, what works, what doesn't work, following the examples of others who have gone before us. We have a lot of living examples here in Ananda, a lot of great souls, and especially our own saint. Masters can make saints. That's a proof of a true master, and we have one in Swami Kriyananda. And but common sense can really only take you so far. You know, the mind wants to understand. It knows something beyond the limitations of the intellect. But the intellect can only take us so far. It separates and divides, and it can only take us so far. And so then we begin with belief, and belief is also a wonderful step because we begin to, you know, take it in more deeply, and we know that the truth that we are getting in touch with is inescapable then. But how we prove that belief is through faith, the faith of actually having experience. And we don't really have that. We can't really deepen that faith without being tested. Testing is God's way of really bringing us close. It's like purifying and bringing the honey of devotion out of us. And I had an experience a few weeks ago. I kind of think about ourselves as geology. You know, we're just like, every so often you can tip into a piece of strata, you know, and you just kind of get into some old karma, bubbles to the surface. And that's kind of what I was experiencing. It was kind of like my signature karma. And I was kind of feeling the effects of it. And I was just trying to be with it. Because one thing that the Yogananda says is, I don't ask you to overcome your karma or your tests. I just ask you to meet them. And that's, in a sense, walking hand in hand with a guru. That's when you really take hold of them and say, you do it with me. I've tried analyzing it. I've tried controlling it. I've tried figuring it out so it'll never happen again. I've tried figuring out why it happened. None of that works. Just take my hand. And so I was really in earnest doing this a few weeks ago. And I went to the ocean. And Kriyananda talks about looking at the horizon of the sea as having an immediate experience of eternity. It's kind of our nature's way of annihilating time. It's our time annihilator. We can just get a sense of time and space just going on into infinity. And we do that in the night sky, looking up at the stars. And we can do that looking up at the mountains and feeling that sense of space and infinite possibility. And I was sitting there looking at the ocean and feeling this kind of, you know, the beach can be such a wonderful way to do this because there was this nice sand dune and I kind of propped my head up so that I was just facing the ocean and the blue sky was up above. And all at once, after a little while of just kind of letting my mind go, I felt this certain karma that had come up as just the most minor storm on the sea of infinity, of the sea of pure consciousness, and how any test, no matter how deep, how great, how life-threatening, is still just a storm on that sea of infinity, because that's who we are. That's what these opportunities give us is a chance to have real perspective, to really stand back and get a broader and broader and broader perspective of what's going on. And what we find is that we go on, Yogananda says, until we reach endlessness. There is no end. And the limits of our little test, whatever it might be, may seem all-consuming. And yet, we dwell always in a sea of perfect, infinite, eternal bliss. I love to read every so often. I get captured by the books of the mountain climbers that go to the top of Everest and all the great peaks in the Himalaya. And I've been reading some lately, and really only a few of those climbers have the good sense to turn back when storms start brewing or when they're running out of time to actually get to the peak. Very few. Most of them just get driven to just get to the top, but beyond, you know, all hesitation. Just they call something at a certain elevation up above 20,000 feet, I think it is, you're entering the death zone, when your body actually begins to die, and you begin to, you know, all kinds of breathing problems, you need extra oxygen, and you start hallucinating. And many of these climbers talk about, who actually survive the experience and come back, that they get to a certain point, and their minds start playing with them. You know, it's this kind of hallucination of being in that zone of the earth. And suddenly their shoes become the Americas, and their jacket becomes France, and their crampons, little edges of their crampons, become people, and they begin talking to them, you know? I mean, you can call it delusional, but yet they also go into this space of completely not caring, realizing they're just throwing themselves into oblivion. And in fact, that's really a lot of what is described of these climbers, is they have this great egoic sense, but yet this also twin desire of just throwing it into oblivion. And, you know, this earth plane gives us these examples of what it's like to experience that sense of infinity of our soul nature. And I think that's what really drives a lot of these climbers to do this, is they just peel away their mortal sense of themselves and feel something so beyond. But that's where we dwell. And that's what everything teaches us to come to, is how deep can you begin to experience this? We find people who are going through real tests among us, and when we ourselves do, when we open our heart to it, that it draws a special magnetism. It draws the guru's grace. It draws words of wisdom pop out of books, but also our friends come and are drawn in, and their hearts open in wanting to support and contribute energy to your cause. And that's God just working with us. We find that when we, that beautiful advice of just meeting the tests, that's a special act of courage, and it takes a while, I think, to even be able to do that. But when we do that, then everything itself, life itself, begins speaking to us of a greater wisdom. And we begin to see, this is just a test in the midst of a sea of bliss, and that's where I dwell. So this is when we begin to understand the guru as a life force that is there for us, and we needn't ever feel like we're alone, because we're always part of this greater infinity. And there's that call in us that will just keep us searching, keep us going. It's endless. And there's this beautiful line out of the Bible. I don't know exactly where this is. It must be in the book of Job, where Job is having this conversation with God, and he says, "Though thou rend me, I love thee still." That's a beautiful thought to take deep within us, no matter what happens. As long as that love, and that love is infinite, that love is eternal with me, if that's where I dwell, then everything will pass into beauty, into light.
Because it was Yoganandaji's Mahasamadhi on Wednesday and Swami Sri Yukteswar's Mahasamadhi on Friday, and with this particular talk today, Swami's often suggested to people who speak in classes or to the public to share your vibration. You have to study for your classes, and you have to have some knowledge of what you're talking about, which helps, but also to share your vibration. So very seldom do I really talk about Swami Kriyananda. I've been around him for almost 30 years now. And because of this particular week and the two events that I mentioned, I could really feel inside of my heart his presence this week, even though I know he's a short 20-hour flight from here. I felt him really close this week because I think about him every day and I ask him questions every day from the heart. I don't email him every day, but I intuitively send him questions. I want to back up a little bit because when I was in high school, a group of my friends and I would spend our weekends in my friend's basement and we would listen to music. We had literally hundreds of albums, symphonies, rock, jazz, everything. And none of us played instruments. We were not guitarists. We were not keyboardists or drummers. We sat down and we listened to music. And I did it for 2 years before we all graduated and went off to college. I took it for granted at that time. But as I got older, and just this week I was thinking about it, because it had a real profound effect on me in that two-year period. After I got out, I left college and began searching for more meaning to life and deeper truths. And I had bought the autobiography of a yogi. I remember standing in a friend's apartment, and he said to me, "Have you heard this album?" And it was a picture of Yogananda on the cover of the album, and the album's entitled Chants, Prayers, and Poems, I believe, and Songs. And we have it over in the boutique. And I said, "No." And I had Yogananda's book for a short time, and I never heard his voice. So the opening of that album is Yogananda speaking. "Pray with me in the deepest devotion of your soul." Now in that particular line, I was teleported. I had spent so many years listening to music and listening to people that when I heard Yogananda's voice for the first time, it locked me in to him. It was one thing to read the book, try to understand, because it was all new. I wasn't on a search for a guru. I was simply questioning, there has to be more to life. I find Yogananda's book. I'm connected to the photograph of Yogananda. And then I hear his voice, and it locked me in. And I thought I would live happily ever after with his book and that album. And that would be completely fine with me. But it was just the beginning of the journey. Hearing his voice, I realized the magnetism, the power, and there was a teaching in it in itself. The vibration, and I didn't use the words vibration and power and magnetism back then, but that's exactly what it was. The magnetism goes on and on and on and on. There's no end to it. And when I would listen to hundreds of different albums and music, all of it was good. All of it was very good, but it left me off at a certain feeling. It didn't quite take me up high enough, or it didn't quite work or registered lower in me. Now, music is all vibrational, and that's what we were doing in high school, listening to all this different vibration of sound. And all of it's good, but all of it left me off. Sort of on an elevator, getting off at the middle floor instead of the top. I hear that one sentence of Yogananda, and I'm gone. It was completely and joyfully ever expansive. Interestingly enough, what a week later, that same group of friends, not from high school, but quite of the friends who were beginning to practice yoga together, were invited me over to hear a speaker from India who was visiting the city, was visiting Buffalo, and he had a guided meditation that he was teaching. So when I went in, sat down, it was philosophy first and then the practice afterwards. But interestingly enough, I sat in the back, closed my eyes, as I had done listening to people for most of my life. I listened to his words, and I knew just in the first sentence that he wasn't quite there. He was a very nice man. He had a good teaching. But I could tell by the sound of his voice, it just wasn't quite. And so I stayed the night, and I never went back to it. Ironically enough, 20 years later, I'm part of the Ananda Center up in Sonoma County, and there's a satsang for one of the teachers, another teacher coming through. These people were very good people. It was a husband and wife, and they were followers of a particular teacher. When I sat down again and listened to them, and their philosophy in the beginning and their practice at the end, they were the same vibration. I couldn't place it at first, but when the person's name was Yogananda, by the way, who was leading the group, when he started to speak, I thought, I know that voice. But it wasn't the same man from Buffalo, but it was the same vibration. And as it turns out, they were following the same teacher. 1970 in Buffalo, the mid-80s in Sonoma County. But I could tell in their voice there was a memory that it felt familiar. Now, the thing that I admired Swami Kriyananda quite a bit. One of the qualities that I respect from Swamiji is his ability to listen. He is one of the greatest listeners I have ever been around. He's often said listening is key, because you never know when Divine Mother is speaking to you. Divine Mother speaks through many people, whether it's someone you don't know, family member, co-worker, only if you listen. And if we listen intently enough, Divine Mother is speaking to us all the time. We just can't quite hear because we're too agitated. Now, how listening falls into dogmatism and common sense, I never went on a search to find the teacher. I've always felt that finding Yogananda's paperback autobiography of a yogi at the mall many years ago, that was it. I didn't know it at the time that was it. But once I had it, I didn't have to go any further. I've been attracted to Buddha for most of my life, but I never really felt to practice Buddhism. It's interesting that when I was at the Ananda Center in Sonoma County, across on the east side of the county was Sonoma Mountain Zen Center. And because we had a large garden at Ocean Song, and they had a large garden, I used to do a little work exchange with them. And one day, when I was up there working, the Roshi, who was in charge of the Zendo, wanted me to stay through the weekend and do practice. They call it sessions. And it's meditating, and you're just in silence. It's quite nice. But I explained to him that, you know, I was a yogi, and I followed Paramahansa Yogananda. He was my guru. And he said, oh, I read Autobiography of a Yogi. That book helped me to find my teacher, Suzuki Roshi, who started Tassajara down near Big Sur. And I said, so you want me to stay? He goes, yeah, you can practice your Kriya Yoga. Just follow some of the rituals that we have in the Zendo and be fine. So he was completely supportive of my, he didn't give me the philosophy of Zazen. He didn't say I had to follow that to sit in the Zendo and practice. He allowed me to practice because he could see in himself the universality of all truths, that it is all one, whatever expression that you find. Now, I don't know if everybody in the world has to go on a spiritual journey to find the right teacher, and by going through the great catalog of teachers, I'm not sure if it all plays out that way. But I do believe that if, in using Swamiji as an example, and if you trust yourself, if you listen to yourself, listening helps you to tune in more to your inner self. By tuning into your inner self, that's where you find the divine, right there. And you let the divine start to develop. Let the divine develop your common sense in which direction to go. Sometimes I haven't made always the right decisions, but you begin to know when it's the wrong decision. I haven't always done what Swamiji has suggested I do, and because I could be moody or stubborn, but in the long run, he was right. But he allowed me to experience for myself why this particular way didn't work. I can remember asking him a question, personal question, many years ago. And when I finished the question, he had the answer, and he said it. And I was so stunned because it didn't fit my question. So he looked at my bewilderment, and felt pity on me, and he backed up a little bit, and he went through it step by step. And I would ask, he would answer my question, he would ask something, I would answer him, and then we took this little journey through words, and we ended up at the same answer at the very end, and then I saw it. Tuning in to listening to sound is one of the keys to anything that we do in life, especially on the spiritual path. Don't doubt yourself. You know, trust, as Richard read, intuitive perception. You develop that. It's already there, and it becomes so strong inside of you that Yogananda, that Swami Sri Yukteswar, this line of teachers, Divine Mother, Swami Kriyananda, you start to feel in yourself, and you become who you are, more of who you are. You don't become less. So when I think about Swamiji and what he's done for me in my life, he's helping me to see my own potential. Because after almost 60 years of his discipleship to his guru, he's not saying, look at me, isn't this great? He's saying, look at you. You have this potential to do this, to tune in to that cosmic sound which is happening right now. Can't quite hear it, but it's there. And if we listen intently throughout the day, throughout meditations, whether they're long meditations or brief meditations, you'll start to hear it, you'll start to feel it, and we'll all start to live it.